We are back on a record. We're going to be discussing petition 20-062. Could you state your names to the record, please?
Melissa Cullen, Property Appraiser's Office.
And John McDonald, representing the property owner.
Okay, John again. All right. Both the petitioner and, the property appraiser were previously sworn in, and the petitioner understands the opening statement. Ms. Cullen, please.
Yes, sir. And no questions.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Cullen just handed me her evidence, and we'll continue from here, okay? Please.
Okay.
May I proceed?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. On page 5 of my packet is the property record card. The parcel number is R15223171774000020. The just assessed and taxable value is $1,730,886. You turn to page 14, I have a summary of the property. It's owned by 7347 FO LLC. It's located on the north side of Forest Oaks Boulevard, east of Commercial Way in Spring Hill. It has approximately 4.27 usable acres of land. And this is a retail strip center that has retail space and retail and office inline space with a unit that is bank space. It was built in 1988. It has 26,568 leasable square feet. It has sold in April of 2020 for $1,375,000, and I have disqualified that sale.
Why?
If you look in my addendum, I've including some documents pertaining to it, but according to the representative for the owner, the property was marketed for sale since 2017. It was marketed by Bruce Strump's company, and one of the owners was his daughter, Jill. Now, upon my research, and I've included this in the back of the packet, I found that there was a list pendants filed. It looks like the other owners filed it against another owner, like maybe they had provided the mortgage. So I think they were under duress, and I'm questioning the validity of the sale.
You have that as part of the evidence?
Yes, I have in the addendum all the documents showing that they have a list pendants, the SunBiz or Division of Corporations information, showing the various owners, and then I have showing that after it was closed that they paid them off, the obviously the mortgage, the foreclosure going on, and you can also see it in the settlement statement that they included in their evidence.
Page.
This starts on page 50, where I have some of the documentation.
Was it actually foreclosed on? Or was...
It was a list pendants was filed and they ended up selling before it was foreclosed.
Okay, good.
And there's more reasons why I don't feel that it's an applicable sale price, but I'll get into that here between this and rebuttal.
Thank you.
We already talked about the adjust, assessed, and taxable values. If you please turn to page 22. This is a comparable improved sales chart. I used 5 sales located in Brooksville and Spring Hill and Wickiwachee. They had effective ages from 1980 up to 2006 with leasable area of 4,800 up to 28,820 leasable square feet. They sold from November of 2016 up to November of 2019. One of the sales, I made an adjustment for property rights. And another sale, I made an adjustment for conditions of sale. You turn to page 23, you can see that I considered market conditions, location, age condition, quality, design, size, and land-to-building ratio. I arrived at a value of $75 per leasable square foot for a total value from the sales comparison approach of $1,992,600. If you will please turn to page 30. I have a comparable rentals chart with four rentals located in Spring Hill. They have an effective age from 1989 to 1992. They range in size from 1,000 to 6,426 square feet available. They have modified gross and double net lease types. And the rental rates before any adjustments range from $9 to $12 per square foot. If you look on page 31, you can see that I've adjusted for expense structure and conditions of lease or listing status. I've also considered the same characteristics for adjustments as I did the sales comparison approach. I came to a rental rate of $10.85 to $13 per leasable square foot, dependent upon the space. You can see I have support for vacancy, expense comps, and the cap rate. You turn to page 40. I have laid out based on the information that I found from their old listing and floor plan, the different spaces that are at the property, and based on my range of rental rates, I've inserted them accordingly based on the space. I used a 8% vacancy and collection loss, which is what the market was indicating as of January 1st, 2020. I have $3.67 per square foot in expenses. I came to an NOI of $187,732. And after loading the cap rate, I use a cap rate of 10.12 for a value of $1,855,468. Turn to page 41, I reconciled to a value after looking at both approaches of $1,910,321. I did consider the eight criteria, and throughout the addendum is the listing information, the foreclosure docs, the property record cards, and some legal information and my qualifications, and that's all I have for right now.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Cullen.
You're welcome.
All right. Mr. McDonald, you did not submit any evidence to be considered. Could you proceed with your testimony?
No, we provided evidence today. And I've spoken to the property appraiser's office a number of times about
this. You provided me with evidence, but I don't know if you provided the clerk's office with evidence.
Well, we did whatever was instructed on the value.
Hold on 1 second. Hang on 1 second. Okay. I do have it. I apologize. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I was looking at a different file.
Just want to make sure it was there.
Yeah, it's here. By the way, the evidence presented by the property appraiser is Exhibit 1, and is it admissible? Bear with me a moment, please. All right, Mr. McDonald, could you proceed? I have your evidence in front of me.
Yes, sir. Okay, I'd like to first start off by saying that and clarifying that the purchase price of the subject property was verified and qualified sale. It was not a foreclosure sale. The property was never foreclosed on. There was a, I'm just going to, just kind of go over a little bit of the sale because that is, I think, the majority of the weight of the evidence. And there was no relationship with the buyer and the seller whatsoever. There was a relationship with one of the tenants in the building, had some kind of family member that was that worked at the listing broker office.
Okay.
So there's no relationship. I know the property appraiser's office is, mentioning there was some kind of relationship, but it was, a tenant in the building and somebody at the listing office. It had no influence whatsoever on the purchase of the property. The property owner, you know, we discussed, I've been discussing this with the property appraiser's office and Ms. McCullen, and, you know, we've gone back and forth on, you know, trying to, she had some concerns about the sale, and I've tried to, you know, any concern that she had, I tried to, you know, look into it, and, you know, especially like the relationship issue, I looked into it. And, you know, we had an offer on the table at $1,000,006 that was offered by the property appraiser's office versus the assessed value at $1,730,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the property owner, you know, I offered that to the property owner, and he was, you know, so adamant that this was a fair arm's length transaction. It was qualified sale that he felt that, you know, why should I settle for something well above what I just paid for the property when it was a arm's length transaction?
What was the condition of the property?
I'm sorry?
What was the condition of the property?
Well, yeah, I can go ahead and get into that a little bit. I just wanted to kind of start off with the purchase of the property because I know that is a critical piece of information.
Absolutely.
The property is a bank, an old bank building. As you can see on some of the photos, I think the property appraiser's office had a couple different angles than I did. You know, as a drive-through, and it was a 21,780 square foot, you know, branch bank building. Half of it is, there was a tenant in 50% of the building that was there for a long, long time. And I think that lease is ending, you know, I believe it was 2020. So what they're doing is they're renovating, they've subdivided the building into two. They're subdividing, let me just have the exact, on page 8 of my income, of my evidence package, my income analysis.
You got it?
And on the bottom, I have some notes at the bottom directly from the property owner that the vacant space of 10,905, which is renovated, and that's going to be owner-occupied. And the balance of the space, I guess the lease is ending, and they are, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to do with the other 10,000 square feet, whether they're going to try to renovate that and list it. But, you know, the property was a bank building. It's not a retail building. It's more of an office-type building that you can clearly see from the pictures. It's not a multi-tenant retail center or anything like that. And so that's what's going on. They, you know, it's been subdivided into two 10,000 roughly square foot spaces, and the owner is it was, you know, an older bank building, so they're just trying to turn it into you know, more office space, and then his owner occupied space.
Okay. Excuse me. So, which portion is owner occupied?
Well, there's going to be a they're renovating that now. It's 10,905.
That's going to be owner occupied.
That's going to be owner occupied.
All right. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. And so what I did is, you know, just to support the, you know, the current purchase price, you know, I went to the market and I did an income analysis and I did a sales comparable analysis. You know, just to you know, further establish, you know, where this property is on a market value, and how an investor and how the owner, you know, the current owner, the buyer, was looking at the property. So what I did is I utilized a gross rental rate of $9. Again, they're two large spaces, so that's, you know, to be, you know, considered when we're looking at rental rates. These are 2 10,000 roughly square foot spaces if you were to lease these on the open market. So that the total square footage, again, 21,780. I stabilized the property at 90%. The property on the right hand column, that's an actual, that's 50%, was, you know, as of January 1st, what was leased. And I utilized a 42% expense ratio, which came out to $3.40. And that left an NOI of $102,322. I capitalized the property at a cap rate of 7.5, that gave me a value of $1,364,000. That is, you know, very close to the purchase price of $1,375,000. So I felt that, you know, that was well supported on the income analysis with the purchase price. I did do a lease up because that is a appropriate thing to do on a property that's this, you know, this has this much vacancy. I don't know if he was looking at it that way because he was going to own or occupy, you know, some of the space, but, you know, an investor looking at this strictly from a rental, you know, perspective. You know, so I have that discounted for lease up. I have that on a different page I can go over, and that came out to $270,000. That would give the value of $1,094,000. I mean, what we're going to be asking for today is consideration for the sale price less the cost of sale, the 15%, which would be the valuation of the sale price of $1,375,000, less the cost of sale, which would bring it to $1,168,000.
Excuse me, the value you're looking for is $1,168,000?
$1,168,750, and basically that's, you know, 85% of the sale price. Okay. And let's see, to go through, you know, some of the lease comparables and, you know, how I derived some of the information for the income approach, begins on page 11. And it says lease comparables. I have a little map, and you can see the lease comparables and how closely they are located to Forest Oaks Boulevard. And that's another thing just to keep in mind is that the property is not on Commercial Way, the main thoroughfare. It's on an offshoot street of Forest Oaks Boulevard. So you're looking at, you know, things on Commercial. You know, they're obviously going to get a premium being right on the main thoroughfare. So I have a summary of those lease comparables on page 13, and then I have, you know, more information on those as well. But I had, there was a property on Commercial, sale number, lease comp number one. It was $12 modified gross. Another second was on Commercial at $9.60. Modified gross. Another one, third one on Commercial is $10 modified gross. Then we have the two, four number five. Number five is actually on Forest Oaks Boulevard at $10 modified gross. And what I did was I used nine, accounting for some negotiations, you know, 10 to 9 was seemed reasonable. You can see the sizes of the space on the summary as well, the year built of the property. Some are much newer than the subject property. Lease comp number two, number five, and again, some of those were on Commercial and were on the offshoot road. So you can see the following pages, starting on page 14, you can see the lease comparables. You know, in detail, I have a write-up on every one of them. I won't go over all of that, but if you have any questions, you know, the lease comparable on Forest Oaks, which is 8368, that would be on my page 18. That property is very similar to the subject property, as you can see from the photo. Again, these are more office-related properties. And that property was asking rent at $10 modified gross. And again, I used nine. That is not on the main thoroughfare. It's on the same street as the subject property. So we feel very very comfortable with that as a very good indicator for a lease, comparable in a lease rate for the subject property. On page 20 starts my cap rates. And that would be from RERC, CITUS report, fourth quarter 2019. And if you look at the office portion of that, the Southeast investment criteria, I've highlighted that on going in cap rate. I don't know if your copy's in color or not.
7.4?
7.4, yes. That's yes. Okay. And then there's, I have two reports in there. One's at 7.4, and the other one. The other one's not highlighted, but it's around 8%. Okay. And I use 7.5, I believe, in my analysis. And then the next page, on page 24, begins my sales comparables. And again, the sale of the subject property, if you look on page 26, you know, we have, let's see, I'm not page 26, I'm at the summary, let me just get to that. On page 28, you know, you see the subject property, you know. But I'd like to basically turn now to page, if you could, page 32. That's the listing.
You got it.
The listing. So, you know, this company, the listing company, has been around for many, many years. They're a reputable company in the area. Bruce Strump company. And I've talked to the office, verified the sale with them. And this is their leasing, this is their listing package. And if property has been on the market since December, I think it was December 2017. To double check that date, yes. So the property was well marketed on the open market. It was, you know, this is a site, you know, it was a very, you know, inclusive listing package. The property has, you know, had proper market exposure, well marketed. Was on the property, was on the market for. You know, a good deal of time with no buyers. I mean, we have an old bank building. There's no bank industry right now. It's not like they're trying to open more branches. The branches are actually cutting back. You know, now you're doing more banking online. So it's not like they had a lot of banks that were ready to jump on the space. So you know, it took a little while to get this property sold. And you can, you know, go through that at your leisure. I don't want to see the space. I mean, it's not like a lot of people, you know, no matter what happens on the inside, you can see some of the inside photos. You know, there's going to have to be renovations. And unless you're a bank, you know, this property needs you know, some renovation expenses associated with it. And then on page 65 is the closing statement.
63 is your discount cash flow.
Yes, that's a little bit out of place. That should be up by the income analysis. I apologize that being so far out of place. But and then there's an addendum. It looks like for the residential contract. I think that was put in there because was trying to show the date because I know the date is a little bit after the date of assessment. So the closing statements on page 65, and that is the property closed on April 22nd, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The property was under contract, and I confirmed this with the buyer. Property was under contract in February. I have the exact date. I'm gonna have to look for that. It was February. I think it was the middle of February. I can try to find that exact date. But so we feel that, you know, there was a meeting of the minds on the price, very close to the date of assessment, within, you know, 30 to 45 days of the assessment. So I realize that the sale took place a little bit after the assessment, but I don't think there was much value change from January 1st, 2020 to the meeting of the minds in February. So we feel that this sale is a very good indication of the market value. And that's all we have for now.
All right. I noticed one difference at this point between the property appraisers' evidence and yours. They indicate that's they're monthly unit spaces in there, about four or five of them, and you're indicating one space.
One that's, basically two, because the owner occupied is going to be in one space. The owner is going to be occupying 10,000.
No, I mean the way the building is structured.
Oh.
In other words, a portion. The photograph looks like that's a branch bank plus other retail stores. Is it not?
Yes, he's incorrect that it's all a bank.
Okay, that, you know, that's...
Yeah, no, it's not all, yeah, okay, that's the majority of it.
Yeah, okay,
well, just... I guess 50% of it.
All right. Ms. Cullen, would you have some rebuttal, I assume?
Oh, yes.
Yes?
Okay. Let me just get my bearings on here. So I want to point out that, of course, the PA's office... Oh, you want my notes?
Yes, you have.
I do.
Oh, you have a copy?
I should.
Certified?
So, first of all,
Excuse me?
Yes.
Housekeeping.
Yes.
Apologize.
Okay.
The petitioner's evidence is Exhibit 2 and is admissible. I'm sorry for the interruption. Could you please
No problem. I'm very familiar with Hernando County. I don't know if the representative has ever been here or how long ago it's been. The subject property is actually adjacent to our Spring Hill office, which is on the west side of the county near US 19. Forest Oaks is an extremely busy road. It's so busy that they probably should widen it. The building sits one lot over from US 19. Adjacent to the west of the property is a very similar property that has a mix of office and retail space with a bank structure on it. And it actually was a foreclosure sale. And it was adjacent to the west of the subject, very similar property. And that sold in September of 2019 for $64.47 a square foot.
Are you looking at page 2?
Yes, it is one of my last bullet points at the top of the
page 2.
What page is this on in your evidence?
This is my rebuttal evidence.
Did I receive that?
No, I don't have to send it.
Okay.
I'm doing it verbally. I said also adjacent to the west of the subject, a shopping center that has a bank building attached to it, has a partial two-story retail and office space, an auto repair tenant, and a huge vacancy at this center, as well as it includes a large restaurant that has been vacant for several years, was a disqualified REO sale. It had a 44% occupancy at sale, similar to the subject, and has 33,780 leasable square feet. It sold in September of 2019 for $2.5 million or $64.47 per square foot, which is very close to my value of the subject.
But you said that sale is disqualified.
Correct. I'm making the point that he feels that our value is too high, but this was an REO sale that was disqualified that is obviously lower than market, and yet it supports my value. So I'm just trying to make that point. So as we were talking about, the subject has bank space in it, and it also has retail and office space. And if one thing I want to point out, if you look in my packet on page 5, you can see that there is actually, bear with me here, two structures listed on there because when we have even though it's one structure. So one of them is the bank space and the other is the office and retail space.
Talking about the bottom of your page 5?
Yes. If you start at the bottom of page 5, there's building 1.
Oh,
and that's the retail and office portion. And then if you look over on page 8, that is the bank portion. Upon reviewing the petitioner's information, I noticed that he excluded 4,788 square feet in his entire analysis.
And that would have been that extra building.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes. Okay. So if you will look over at his evidence on page 8, his income analysis.
Okay. Proceed.
If you actually correct it and add that 4,788 square feet to it and recalculate everything down the line, his stabilized value actually calculates to $1,664,227.
Okay, but that would be the one, the capitalized value?
Yes.
I repeat that value again.
$1,664,227.
Okay.
And I'm going to get into his lease up and cost of sale here shortly, but I'm going to go ahead and move on.
Okay. Could you repeat for me, I don't have in front of me, the extra square footage?
4,788.
88 square feet. Thank you.
Okay, his page 14. So this lease comp at 3233 Commercial Way is a two-story office building with stairs and an elevator. It was recently purchased, and they are starting to redo it. It's always been in poor condition and had a high vacancy. It's toward the south end of Commercial Way, which is not really one of the best areas right now. So I just wanted to bring that up. The comparable on... And regarding that one as well, the unit that he's using as a comparable is located on the second floor. On page 17, this is an office building that just has regular office units over on Deltona. Page 18, this space has been listed for a long time. It's actually office units within an office park. And then let's go to his evidence, page 27. So right now we're sitting in downtown Brooksville, which is the more central point of the county. The subject, of course, is on the west side of the county. This comp at 26 South Brooksville Avenue is an office building in downtown Brooksville that was built in 1925. It's not comparable. It's not even in the same market, or a similar type market. So it's just not, in my opinion, a very good comparable. Page 28, of course, is of the subject, and I don't know if he was maybe trying to get into the sales on these, but so far, the last one and the one on page 28 are disqualified sales. Page 30, also near downtown Brooksville, older office building, and it sold in July of 2019 and was a disqualified sale. Page 31 is also near downtown Brooksville, single family residence that was an office conversion. And let's see. Just bear with me here. Okay. I'm not sure, I know they said that this was the property was listed since 2017.
What are you referring to?
The bottom of my...
Page 33?
Yes. Okay. Yes, page 33. This has been listed since 2017, according to the representative. Again, what I looked at when I did some research on this sale is I looked at the seller's name, and I looked at it in SunBiz and showed multiple different owners. Under that, you can see in my addendum where the list pendants was filed by those owners against Jill Strump, who was also the listing agent or listing office for the property. So that's why I think it's not a good sale. That's the short version.
Is this the subject property? Again?
Correct.
What's that DIS?
What page is that?
I'm referring to your page 33, where the listing information starts, but in my packet at the beginning of the addendum is where I have the list pendants and the documents.
So what page is that? I'm trying to find it.
That is... starts on page 50 of my packet.
Okay. So who's related to who?
If you look under SunBiz, the owner or the people that are part of the seller LLC, which is CDSS Forest Oaks, is Jill Strump, Chris and Tsokos, which I can't pronounce his name, Diane Kutras, Suresh Kator. You turn to the next page, page 52. The plaintiffs are three of those people, and the defendant is CDSS Forest Oaks. Then if you turn to where it actually sold, you can see that one of those people signed for the sale. Then you can see on page 55 where the list pendants and mortgage was released, and basically... that again confirms it. Also, if you look on your settlement statement, one of the people, let me finish.
Hang on.
One of the people that were one of the sellers was paid off on the settlement statement, and it actually lists his name in there.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
On that listing and sale adjacent, what's DIS? That's a typo of some sort.
Front page.
Right in the bottom. 833 and 64. Adjacent.
I was saying that what we discussed previously, that the property adjacent to the west of the subject was a disqualified sale.
Okay. Listing and sales adjacent DIS.
Disqualified.
Okay. All right. That's
so, further, I, explained to the petitioner that I can't consider a sale in 2020 because I have to follow, certain rules and requirements. I did request a copy of the contract and the settlement statement. I received that one page in their packet. I believe it was a portion of the addendum to the contract and the settlement statement. And I want to point out something that also set off a red flag to me in their information that they provided. If you can please go to page 64 of his packet.
Okay.
On there, because I've had some experience with foreclosures, it sets off a red flag to me as an appraiser that it says buyer's best and last offer at the adjusted purchase price of $1,375,000. That concerns me. It's like saying give me your highest and best when there's a competition for bids because it's a good price. So now let's go to page 63, which is the lease up. We've already discussed that some of the square footage was excluded. One thing that concerns me is I know that the petitioner was stating it's two very large spaces, but I don't agree with that. I think that at the time of sale, it was broken down in smaller spaces, or at the time of value, excuse me. It's relevant right now for the 2020 value, what they're doing with it now. That won't be taken into consideration until 2021. It also concerns me if, in fact, it is either broken down into slightly smaller spaces or two large spaces, that an absorption of 700 square feet would be used. I don't think that's really accurate. and the fact that 13 months was used on a lease up when a direct cap only considers 12. So I was in disagreement with that. Finally, for the cost of sale adjustment, if you will look on page 65 of his settlement statement. So when I looked at this to see how much the petitioner, the buyer had, spent, or excuse me, the seller had spent, I excluded some things. I did include the settlement charges, which were $85,738. I also included the commissions. I did include the attorney fees, which I feel are high and might have been because of what was going on. But even with those included, the cost of sale calculates out to 10.9%. So I just wanted to bring that up. And that is all I have.
All right. Mr. McDonald, the rebuttal is Exhibit 3, and it's admissible. Okay, Mr. McDonald, please proceed.
Okay. I'd just like to first start off with just turning to the property appraiser's office, page 12 and 13. It's their subject of pictures of the photos of the subject property. Because I just wanted to make sure that, we all know what this property is, very large spaces. If you want to say it was three spaces or four spaces, the property owner is qualified, verified with me is two spaces that they're working with right now. But you can see that it's not a retail looking building. It's not multi-bay, where you have storefronts. And the reason why I'm pointing that out is a lot of the property appraiser's office information, even the lease comps, they're pulling lease rates from multi-tenant retail properties. And if you can turn to page 17 with their evidence, you can see clearly that this is not the same type of property. This is a retail with multi-bay design, constructed for retail purposes. That's not similar to the subject property, in my mind, whatsoever. This has high retail frontage. This property, sale number one, just trying to find the summary there. I'm not sure if that was on commercial or next page, sale number eight, page number 18. If you look at that property and look at the subject property, it's not similar. Even their improved sale number two, page 19. Again, that's a multi-tenant constructed retail center. I'm just pointing these things out because it was almost portrayed as a retail building where there is, I guess you could say there's components that could be possibly of a retail use, but it's really an office use. It was an old bank, and it's the design of the building, the structure of the building, the layout of the building was more of an office, and that's going to demand retail with high exposure, high frontage. This property has land in front of it. There's not a lot of exposure, as a high retail property that they're using for lease comps. So just want to point that out. And then as far as the sale price, I saw there was, some Liz Pendens paperwork that she had, the Sunbiz paper that she produced doesn't tie the owner. It ties someone that's was a tenant in the building that has a relationship with the listing office. So there's in the property she referred to it as a foreclosed property. It wasn't a foreclosed property. It wasn't a foreclosed sale. the highest and best offer on that page, that addendum, yeah, that's what happens. I mean, I'm a real estate agent, and those are the terms that we use. You know, hey, put your highest and best offer. You know, they got other people looking at the property. I mean, or even if not, that's put your highest and best offer. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that terminology. So I know the property appraiser's really office wants to somehow deem this sale as a not market sale, and it's a qualified sale, and I verified the sale with you know the listing office and the buyer. So you know I have and it, we have a marketing package. I know she did like a few of my sales, you know, I'm not relying most weight on some of the other sales that I put in there. The best, most accurate depiction of the value and the most weight should be given to the sale of the subject property. As far as the cost of sale, I was at 15%, and I'll be happy to reduce that to the actual cost of sale being 10.9%. That's a, you know, that's something that I'm fine with, you know, making that adjustment.
Mr. McDonald,
I feel.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, I was just going to say. So I feel, you know, in conclusion, that you know the best indicator of value is the subject sale price less that 11%.
Okay. All right. You were relying originally on your also the value indicated by your income approach, but you did not include an extra 4,000 plus square feet in that analysis.
Yes. Yeah. So what I've done, and I didn't have time to research that space. I'm just going to go with okay. Let's go with
the sales price.
Appraiser's office. So if we did that, and the property appraiser's office calculated the value at 1,669,000 or 4,000, I couldn't remember. So if you take that value and you take the discount for lease up, and I know it was 13 months instead of 12 months, okay, it's going to be you know very close. You deduct that $270,000. This is right from my own analysis. That's going to come to if you subtract $270,000 from $166,000, that's $1,394,000. The purchase price was $1,375,000. So even adding that 4,700 square feet of space in there, it comes out right on top of the purchase price.
Okay. All right. All right. I do thank you very much. End of this petition. The rebuttal evidence presented by the property appraiser, Exhibit 3, and it's admissible.